Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts and ray@rte.ie for your emails. I hope you're in good form today. Annie was on and she watched the David Brophy Unsung Heroes thing that was on last night on the telly. We spoke to David last week and we spoke to one of the members of the choir and we spoke to Christy Dignam and we said that it was well worth the watch. Well, Annie watched it. She says, just in case you didn't watch it and you didn't hear the interview, I should tell you what it's about. David Brophy, the conductor, got together a group of carers from the southeast of the country and he made a choir out of them. That's what he does. And Annie says, what an amazing group of people. Why don't we as a society recognise them as the heroes that they are? There are people going through such difficult and hard times caring for the ones they love but not getting any recognition whatsoever. My heart was broken watching their daily struggles and worries and I can do nothing but think of them all this morning. A great show and a real eye-opener for anyone watching who may be stressing about the little things. Thanks for the recommendation. So that's Annie and you can watch it on the player and it's David Brophy's Unsung Heroes and I think there's one or two further episodes in that. Still on telly, there's a good old scrap this morning between Piers Morgan and Rudy Giuliani. And you know Rudy Giuliani, he used to be the mayor of New York and now he's the attorney to the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump. And I remember hearing about him first and he was one of those men who was respected and revered back in the day and he introduced zero tolerance. I don't know if he coined the phrase, but definitely his name was attached to it because he introduced zero tolerance in New York City and he turned the crime rate on its head there. And I always thought he was one of the good guys. Maybe he is one of the good, never met him. Anyway, he was on this morning, stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning to talk to Piers Morgan and Piers's co-presenter, Susanna, on the telly this morning, Susanna Reid. And they got into a bit of a tiff. And it was over that tweet that Donald Trump issued, I think earlier on in the week, was it Monday night or maybe Sunday night, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Seemingly that was originally said by Walter E. Headley and has been labelled as a racist comment. It was originally uttered by Walter E. Headley, a Miami police chief during the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And they were fighting over that and it got quite ugly. And if you didn't see it, here's a clip from the interview between Piers Morgan, Rudy Giuliani and Susanna Reid to a lesser extent. Here we go.
Rudy, I'm sorry,
but the interview is over as far as I'm concerned.
You sound completely barking mad. Do you know that?
No, I don't.
You've lost the plot.
Like a big liar.
You've lost the plot. And it's sad to see.
You're the one who got thrown off the television here.
Yeah.
You had ratings that were about 2.
Yeah.
So don't tell me I've lost anything.
You keep going, Rudy.
I know what happened to your show, Piers.
Yeah.
And I remember the mistakes you made.
I
remember how you stuff.
Yeah, well, I remember.
So don't give me that stuff. I know who you are.
Well, we'd like
you
to apologize.
You can say anything you want about me.
We'd like to apologize for the language you just used.
You're defaming my president, and you are helping to create violence in this country with the way you're covering this.
When I used to interview you, you were an intelligent, reasonable man, and you've gone completely mad, and you sound deranged.
You're abusive, saying that because
it's really sad to see what's happened to you.
And Rudy Giuliani saying that Piers Morgan on a breakfast show in the UK is contributing to the violence in America. That sounds completely daft. I don't always agree with Piers Morgan. But I think he put Rudy Giuliani in his place. It's a crazy world we're living in at the moment. Jean, for a bit of normality, sends an email to ray@rte.ie. She says, like everyone else in lockdown, I've been doing a lot of decluttering. I was reading that Marie Kondo book and now I'm only keeping things that spark joy. I've come across about 20 bras to go out and I don't know what to do with them. I'm based in Limerick and I don't know whether they could be recycled for another use. I don't want to just dump them. I heard charity shops are reopening on Monday and there's no doubt they'll be overwhelmed with donations, but I don't think you can really give bras to charity shops. I want to see if you or your listeners had any advice of what to do with my old bras. They're in good nick and I would like them to be recycled or used in some way rather than put in the bin. Jean, we had a man lined up and I don't know why we didn't speak to him. But early on in the lockdown, he was converting ladies' bras into face masks. And he was doing a very good job at it. Just imagine the shape. See, that, so that's a possibility. If anybody else has any suggestions as to what Gene can do with 20 old bras, I don't know. I've no experience, obviously, Gene. And a related topic, Laura was on at Street Masks Ireland. She says, we're a small Irish startup making affordable non-medical face masks. We've been in contact with Dublin LGBTQ and we're launching a Street Pride range this week with donations going to Dublin LGBTQ on every mask sold. As we are all missing out on the physical parade this year, this is Pride in Dublin, we thought it would be nice for our community and allies alike to have the opportunity to wear your pride, even if it's just on essential trips to Tesco. We would love to send you some if you wanted to spread the word on your show. That would be great. So Laura at Street Masks Ireland, and she sent us a picture of their rainbow-coloured face masks. And everyone that sold, the profits go to the Dublin LGBTQ community, which is great. So maybe, Jane, we could hook you up with Laura. I don't know if she what she uses. I doubt that she uses bras. Marion has been on. I'll come back to that. And so too has Claire. Claire McSweeney. We read out Claire's email yesterday and she's getting married to Aaron on the 23rd of June and they were looking for a solemniser. Thanks to everybody. There's a lot of people, a lot of solemnisers out there who are available on 23rd of June. And Claire got back on to us because we got on to her. Anyway, she says, thanks so much for reading out my email. We found a solemniser and we'll be married on the 23rd of June in Knockgrove's house in Kiltiernan. So that's good news. Congratulations in advance to Claire and to Aaron. And congratulations as well to Aisling B. Aisling B, fellow Kildare woman. The nominations for the BAFTA Television Awards and Television Craft Awards 2020 were announced this morning and Aisling B was included on the list of nominees. Comedy writer and actress who hails from County Kildare, just outside Kildare town as it happens, has been nominated in the Best Breakthrough Talent category in the craft section of the awards for writing This Way Up, which was brilliant. She not only wrote it, but she starred in it because it was sort of autobiographical, sort of semi-autobiographical. So congratulations. That's big news for Aisling B. And we're all very proud of Aisling in County Kildare. More news on birds. We were talking about peacocks yesterday and who would have known that there were so many peacocks around the country. We got a text just after the show to confirm that Bono does indeed, or it did at some time in the past, have peacocks. So he was connected to peacocks at some stage because we were asking that question throughout the show. Marie Lyons is a bird watcher. She's been on to us about magpies again. And she says, no wonder the magpies mind their nests. They're the greatest attackers of other birds' nests. I live on a farm and this year more than ever, I see them stealing blackbirds, thrushes and smaller birds' eggs. They suck them and attack nests all over the place. Last year, a thrush built her nest in a pergola under my window and had laid her first egg one evening. Early next morning, I awoke to noise on the roof. There they were, the dreaded murderers, and the poor thrush looking sadly as they devoured her egg. I hate them. They build around the farm, fly around surveying where they'll get a handy meal. I've seen them hanging from water pipes, getting at little birds' nests. My grandson saw a buzzard attack a magpie's nest on our farm, but the magpie won out. And she has now had her brood in the tree, which I can see from my window. I notice a huge decline in small birds since the magpie population has increased. Call them, says Marie Lyons. We must get somebody on who's a specialist in magpies. And finally, in this round of thingamajigs, Deirdre Featherston has been with us in the past. And Deirdre is one of the organisers of the Strip and Dip fundraiser for Evine's Pink Tie. And I think it was last year they broke all sorts of records, not only with the number of people who got involved in the Strip and Dip, but also the amount of money they raised for Evine's Pink Tie. Well, this year, like most events, it's been cancelled, but they're going online. They're going online. They've raised hundreds of thousands of euro over the last 7 years and even broke the record for the world's largest skinny dip, as I said. So if you want to do the virtual dip, which is happening this Saturday, I don't know exactly how it works, but you can go to virtualdip.ie, virtualdip.ie, and we're happy to tell you about that. Could you, love David Brophy, great guy, beautiful programme, says Aina in Mullingar. And Paul says, raffle them as a booby prize for charity. Face masks, bras are perfect for every size of mouth, says Anne in Mullingar. And I'm collecting bras for sending to Africa. Seemingly the Nile Melon Trust. So there you go. Bras donate to Women's Refuge Centre, somebody else. Bras are actually a massive shortage in third world countries. She should direct them to a charity that would donate in this direction, says Linda Wicklow. Maybe Nile Melon Trust there. And for spare bras, Jean has in Limerick, make hanging baskets. A pole at either side, hang bra sideways, fill with compost, plant pansies in them. A joy to look at for male gardeners, says Dermot. So I love the pansies in your bra, would be the comment, I suppose, at the end of it all, Dermot. Thanks for that. 5 on 5 5 on radio.rt.ie. Somebody else says catapults for water balloons out in the back garden. That's not a bad idea either. Now, yes, this one, there we go, yep. Yes, yes, yes. The All-Ireland quiz continues today, and it's Laois versus Roscommon. Laois versus Roscommon. So if you are from either of those countries, even counties, and were born in either of those counties, and you want to step up to the plate and represent your county, fly the county flag. 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And we'll have somebody from Laois and somebody from Roscommon on the show after 4 o'clock. Thank you very much. Now, as we've been doing for the last week or so, we've been reading out entries from a page from my life competition, just to give you an idea of the kind and standard of writing that we've received. And we have received thousands. And I don't know if it's encouraging or whatever, but we've received hundreds that have been written longhand and posted into RTE Donnybrook Dublin 4. So thank you. Thank you. So Frances is up today. And Frances did both. She sent it into life@rte.ie, and then she wasn't sure that it had been sent, so she sent it in by snail mail as well. So thanks very much, Frances, for your two entries. Same 500 words. So this is Frances. I'm fiddling with the tuning dial, trying to reconnect with RTE Radio 1 and a Richard Ford interview. A bloody thing keeps sliding out of tune, I complain. More to myself than Liam. Suddenly, the ancient transistor surges into clarity. A marriage only survives if you can keep the conversation going, the writer declares with authority. My reclining husband rouses into voice. What a load of rubbish. I wasn't sure if he was referring to this eminent author or the actual radio set. Everyone's an expert on everything these days. Who wants a surviving marriage anyway? Does he mean a living marriage? I was about to answer, but he had already drawn his own conclusion. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Words only serve to confuse understanding. Liam has never been a big conversationalist. The transmission fades to an unintelligible whir. I feel him smiling beneath the discarded T-shirt he has placed over his face. I click the dial and we lapse into a lazy silence. We are lying semi-naked in the den. Liam in his ill-fitting boxers and me in my mismatched bra and knickers. We're lying in the sun together apart. This summer practice is now in its 38th year. With closed eyes, we bathe in the warmth, sheltered in our sanctum sanctorum. Our cadence breathing attunes to nature's own voices, humming, buzzing, chirping, singing, translucent in harmony. I drift on sounds of grazing cattle in nearby fields. Snippets of conversations carry on memory's wavelengths. My mother's voice. Do you think she'll marry him? My father's tones, resonant and decisive. They're a total mismatch. Him and his motorbikes, her and her books. He's a townie, she's a country girl. I don't even know if he goes to mass. You'll have to talk to her. The petal touch of Liam's hand on mine draws me back to the present, skin on skin, and I reawaken. His gentleness talks as our fingers intertwine, reaffirming his promise to take my hand. We stretch palm to palm, reciprocating tenderness. I take thee. He rhythmically strokes the moist folds to my fingertips, turning my dial, megahertz spinning. To love and to cherish. His thumb caresses my palm with perfect frequency. I cup it and thrill at its firmness within my soft embrace. To have and to hold. Our hands pulsating in the most ancient of all languages, copulate in scintillating communion. My heart bursts into full bloom for all of our lives. No words to confuse understanding as these two hands fit into one another, perfectly matched. each bathing in the warmth of the other, totally satisfied. These hands, snug in their snuggery, have held each other through births and deaths, disappointments and joys, sickness and health, good times and bad. If marriage survives on conversation, it lives on the language of the touch of love. No need for fine-tuning. The reception is strong with conversations that will last a lifetime. Thanks, Francis. Nat King Cole, Let There Be Love on RT Radio 1, 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Now, 13 years ago, last month, 3-year-old Maddie McCann disappeared from the Ocean Club Resort in Praia da Luz in Portugal. And overnight, there's been probably the biggest breakthrough in the case in 13 years. And now the man at the centre of this breakthrough has been named as Christian Bruckner. Clarence Mitchell, who's been the spokesperson for the McCanns, is going to talk to us in a moment. But first, we'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, as I said, Clarence Mitchell has been the spokesperson for Gerry and Kate McCann since their daughter went missing 13 years ago, and he's on the line now. Hello, Clarence.
Afternoon.
Yeah, thanks so much for talking to us today. I was saying before the ads that this is probably the biggest breakthrough in the last 13 years. Is that the case?
Well, it certainly appears to be the most significant development. I'm not sure we can call it a breakthrough yet. We still don't know what has happened to Madeleine. The British police are very keen to have people come forward with specific information surrounding this man in Germany who's currently in prison over there for other offences. It's the first time in 13 years, more than 13 years, that I can recall any of the police forces involved being quite so specific about an individual person. We've been here, of course, with many sightings and tip-offs and witness appeals in the past, all of which sadly have come to nothing. But this is the first time that I can recall that not just one, but now three police forces are essentially pointing to an individual. They're not naming him officially, but nevertheless, it seems clear that he is a subject of great interest to them, and therefore it can only be seen as significant for the moment.
And they've placed him via his mobile phone around the Ocean Club on the night when Madeleine disappeared.
So it would appear. I'm not a police officer. I'm yes. not authorised to talk about the technical details or the operational details. But from what the Metropolitan Police have said overnight, it seems they want information on his movements in the area. He apparently was living an itinerant lifestyle in a camper van. He also had a Jaguar car, which was registered to his name in Germany on the night before Madeleine went missing. He apparently, according to the police, had a half an hour conversation on a Portuguese mobile number from another Portuguese number, and the police have very unusually released those numbers in an effort to jog people's memories. And then the following day, the Jaguar car, apparently he re-registered it in someone else's name, which all of it is circumstantial, but clearly it was enough for the police to consider him. And I also understand that the police received a tip-off 3 years ago about him following an anniversary appeal on the 10th anniversary of Madeleine going missing for information. And that seems to be the case, that they've been examining him and his alibis, if he has any, for the last 3 years at least. That's why the police are taking it seriously, and that's why Kate and Gerry have welcomed this development, ominous as it may be, given the man's apparent criminal history.
And what's the significance that in Germany they're treating it as a murder case, while in the UK it's still treated as a missing persons case?
Well, again, that's a matter for the police, okay. And no doubt the Germans will have their own reasons for saying that. They have said in the latest press conference a couple of hours ago that they are assuming that Madeleine has been murdered. There is no evidence that she has been at this stage that I'm aware of. And the Met in the UK were quite at pains yesterday to say they were keeping an open mind. There is no evidence either way that she's alive or dead. And as a result, they are still treating it as a missing persons inquiry. I understand as well the Portuguese authorities are being careful as to what they say may or may not have happened to Madeleine at this stage. Everybody is waiting for further information from the police once they get the response to this appeal they've made overnight.
And is he a person that has been mentioned before, either by name or by description?
Well, again, you're asking me to stray into police details. I'm not privy to many of them, to be honest, nor should I be. But as I understand it, his name was unknown to the British investigation until at least 2017. He clearly is a known convict for other offences in Germany, and I think it sounds like the police have been piecing it together once his name became of interest. And they need further evidence to establish exactly what has happened. Kate and Jerry, as I say, have welcomed this. They've always wanted the most simple thing, and that is to understand what has happened to their daughter and to find her. They still hope, despite all this, that she might be alive. They've always believed that on the basis that there was no evidence to suggest she had come to harm. But they are realistic. They accept that uncovering the truth may mean the worst possible news, but they want those who were responsible brought to justice, and very simply, they will never give up hope until they know for sure what has happened. They need to know, and they need to find peace, as they said last night, and that's the basis on which they, the family, their friends, are moving forward. But whether this leads to resolution, we just don't know yet.
And Clarence, it must be a living hell for Kate and Jerry. Over the last 13 years, there have been moments where they thought they were closer to finding out what had happened to their daughter.
Yes, indeed.
Do you get a sense that they feel that this may be the closest they've been?
It's hard to say. You're right. It's been a living hell. And in their private moments, I'm not aware of their thoughts to that extent.
No.
But nevertheless, there have been ups and downs. Right at the start, there were various sightings that gave them hope each time. But I'm afraid as each one of those fell away, they learnt through bitter experience not to get their hopes up or down, and just to listen to the police who were doing the proper hard yards of investigating this. So, as I say, that's why, I mean, optimism is the wrong word under the circumstances that's why they're not talking about optimism or hope in that sense. They still hope Madeleine might be alive, but they're realistic enough to know that may sadly not be the case. But until the police can tell them, they won't be able to get that peace that they need and the justice that it should be done for whoever, if it's one person or more, who was responsible for taking Madeleine in the first place.
I haven't seen the German prosecutor's press conference. Is there anything else that they said?
They basically reiterated the statement that was put out last night on German television. They have a German version of the former BBC programme Crime Watch, and the head of the German police investigation there basically said they assumed that Madeleine was dead, and that's why they were treating it as a murder inquiry. They haven't named the man. Under German law, that can't be the case. There is a name circulating in British media and others at the moment. I cannot and will not confirm or deny that. And I'm sure details will emerge in due course. But the German statement this afternoon essentially reiterated what they said last night.
Okay. Clarence Mitchell, spokesperson for the McCanns, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Now, 10 years ago, I met an amazing lady. I was asked to present an award at the People of the Year Awards. They said, would you give the award to a lady called Emma Fogarty? And Emma is the oldest survivor with EB in Ireland. Now, I knew nothing about EB. I never met Emma. But immediately when I met her, she made an impression on me. And we've chatted over the years. And she's on the line now. How are you doing, Emma?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Now, we can't presume that people know what EB is. It definitely is something that I know what it is. But we just explain, say, for example, today now, is today a good day or a bad day?
I suppose, in relative terms, today will be a good day because I don't have a language change to do today. So I'm just back from my 6K walk. I'm lying in bed here, just relaxing.
Okay. So yesterday would have been then, I suppose, a bad day because it was a bandage day.
Exactly, yeah. Every Monday, Wednesday and Friday I do a 4-hour dressing change. and words cannot explain the pain you go through. And I'm on a high dose of medication, including a mix of morphine, fentanyl, and ketamine, and it doesn't touch the pain. I've 80% of my body is covered in wounds, and it's a tough 4 hours.
Right. 4 hours?
Yes, 4 hours.
And how many people are involved? Is it just one person who does it with you, or?
No, I'd have two nurses, or I've two PAs that would help me.
In talking to people over the years, because I'm trying to bring this home to people, people would have said, "Is it like this or is it like that?" And of course, you've lived with this all your life. But how would you describe it then to people? Something from their life that they would be able to compare it to.
Oh, well, I suppose if I was walking towards you in the street and I bumped off you, you would just keep walking and you wouldn't even notice. Hmm. Whereas I'd stop and the skin would be torn off my arm, and there would be no skin there and probably bleeding.
Right. Yeah. And I remember when I first spoke to you, it's like you've no, this is the description to me, and it's probably wrong, but that there's no outer layer of skin.
No, so everyone has three layers of skin, your epidermis, your dermis, and a middle layer of collagen. And I'm actually missing that middle layer of collagen that holds the skin layers together. So without that collagen, the skin layers can tear apart easier.
Right. And you're born with EB?
Yes, I was born with it. I was born with no skin on my left foot and my right arm.
And does it get progressively worse then as you get older?
Yeah, I would say I was definitely a lot better as a child, and over the years my fingers fused together, and I just got more and more bandages over my body, where now 80% of my body is covered in wounds.
The fusing of the fingers, that's... Mm. So as a child then you had, five fingers and...
Separate fingers, yeah.
Yes, four fingers and a thumb, same as the rest of us. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. And I still would. If people saw me and I wiggled my fingers, that you would see them, but they're just joined together. It's like they've been glued together over the years.
So you don't know a life without pain, Emma?
No. Every day is in pain. I'm lying in bed now and I'm in agony. And that's not because of the 6K walk. It's just that is my life. I lie in bed. I sit in a chair. I could be out for an hour. And I'm in pain. I'm taking medication to just go out for a coffee.
Right. There's research been done, and we'll talk about your fundraising challenge in a moment. But there's a quote from you that whenever I think of you, I think about this. You said to me once that when you go to hospitals, that the oncologists are like vultures circling around you.
Yeah,
I know it's you laugh because you have to have a black sense of humour to deal with your life, but that was the constant threat of cancer.
Yeah, the cancer is a constant threat in ED because you open wounds, and from your 20s up, you're always kind of kept a close eye on, and that's why I would have said the wolf circulating, but the vultures finally caught up with me, unfortunately, last year. And I was diagnosed with cancer in my left foot. And fortunately, there was no choice but operate. And I had to lose the foot.
Right. So, amputation.
Yeah.
I know you knew that day was coming, but when it finally arrived, it must have been a terrible shock. I mean, the cancer.
God.
Yeah.
There's no words to describe it. I knew the wound was bad. It was probably one of the worst wounds I've ever had. It was ugly. It was vile. It was different to everything else I've ever seen in my whole life. But hearing the words cancer and then amputation, I always thought I was relatively well for my age. But to hear amputation, it was definitely a struggle.
Yeah. When I've met you, you have your public face on, and it's a very brave, engaging, warm, bubbly public face.
Ah, thank you.
No, because you are an amazingly strong woman, and you would be forgiven to go home and pull the curtains and just stay there, but that's not what you do.
No.
You get up and you go at it again. So when did the amputation happen?
Last November.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was brought up by determined parents, by strong parents, and I would like to think I have carried that through, and I'm definitely one determined person.
Yeah. And on the low days, where do you get your strength? Like, when you woke up from that operation and your foot was gone, like, where do you, how do you get the strength? Where do you get it from?
I didn't get it for a long time. I remember telling my friend Georgina that, you know, get used to sitting in this room because I'll never leave this room again. I didn't want to leave the house, and it took me a long time to do that. And when I did, I went to towns I didn't know, to places where nobody knew me. But eventually I found the strength to just face it and face it head on, because ultimately you have no choice. This is my life now, and I have to accept it.
Yeah. You're amazingly strong.
Thank
you. Deborah Ireland, which provides support for families affected by EB, and they've supported you over the years, and they also try to fund research into treatment and maybe ultimately a cure for EB. Like all charities in the country, all their events have been cancelled, and so they're going to be strapped for cash. So as you did in the past, because you've been their ambassador for years, You've stepped up to the plate. Excuse the sort of weird pun.
No pun intended.
A terrible pun.
We've had loads of those. Don't worry.
So your birthday is the 25th of June.
Yes.
Right. And tell us what you've started already. So what's the challenge?
I have started. So when I had my surgery, I stepped back for quite some time as patient ambassador. I was always patient ambassador, but I just stepped back to take some time for myself. And I said, you know what, it's time to get back on the saddle and do something and go out there with a bang. And so I turned 36 this year, and I thought, wouldn't it be great to do the 36-kilometre challenge and to just, for the month of June, walk 36 kilometres, not in one day, but over the month of June. And so... obviously, I can't walk. I'm in a wheelchair. But the amazing Georgina is pushing me all the way. Like, she's pushing, like, 9 stone and walking 36 kilometres. And she's doing amazingly. And people will say, well, sure, that's easy for you. You're sitting in a chair. But it's not. It's the test of endurance of pain. Can I endure a bump, a pothole, a ramp, a pebble in the street? Can I endure all that? And that is my test.
I was watching Johnny Sexton's video of support for you and encouraging people to get on to Just Giving and go to Emma's 36 challenge. And he was saying, because he's a sportsman, and he was saying what Emma is doing may not seem like a lot to you, but it is amazing because... the pain that now today, for example, I spoke to you while you were on your walk push with Georgina, and you were in pain then. I was.
I just after I spoke to you, I took a fentanyl tablet.
Right. Well, then people at home are going, why would you put yourself through it? That's what they're saying. Why would you put yourself through it, Emma?
For Deborah Ireland. Deborah Ireland has taken a huge hit this year, you know, and as you said, every charity has. But I am the patient ambassador, and I want to step up, and I want to do something, and I want to do something strong and powerful, and that sets out a test for other people, that other people can join in. Other people can go for walks virtually, obviously, but we can all make a difference. Things might be tough now, but we can make it better by working together.
Yeah. I mentioned Johnny Sexton there, another great supporter of yours, and now he's become a friend, is Colin Farrell, and he's on the line from the United States of America. How are you doing, Colin?
Good morning. So, hey, Ray.
Hey, Colin.
How you look? How's it going?
Colin, you know this woman. Just how amazing is she?
Listen, man, I have been on the phone listening to the last 10 minutes of your chat together, and I find myself... like, I've known Emma now for 10 years, I'd say. and we've had some great chats, and we've had some, you talked about her social face, you know, that social mask, and we all have a version of it, and Emma's version is kind of incredibly extreme in that it hides the pain that she is feeling at any time throughout the day. And I've seen that face, but I've also, I think, and she can tell me I'm talking shite, and she fooled me, but she's allowed me to see beyond that a little bit as well. She's allowed me into her life as a friend. And so, yes, I listened to your chat over the last 10 minutes and I find myself awed as if I was hearing it for the first time. Truly, as if I was hearing her condition for the first time, the struggles that she deals with daily for the first time, her bravery and strength of character for the first time. I mean, I honestly just, she is without doubt the bravest person I have ever met in my 44 years of being alive. I've never met anyone that has to deal with the pain and the struggle of existence the way she does all the time. It's extraordinary. She just said there, I just popped a fentanyl as if she just, you know, had a 99. Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. And the fact that she's doing this, and she told me, Ray, that she was going to be doing the 36-kilometer walk. She'll tell you herself, I said, what? Is there not another way to do this?
I think you nearly cried, Colin.
And no, I was really upset, and then I thought, Farrell, get over this. This is not about you and your discomfort with what she's putting herself through. This is Emma's call, and Emma is an incredibly, obviously incredibly self-determined person. And just thinking about it, as listening to you talking, and you saying as well, Ray, like, Jesus, why would you deal with the pain? And the only thing I can think of is maybe it's a way, whether it's conscious or not, to master the pain. And when I say master it, I don't mean not feel it. I don't mean not fear it, but not let it impede the standard of life that Emma insists that she is always going to engage with. And so it's not the boss of her. She lives with it. She lives under it at times. Sometimes she gets a bit above it, but it's always there, but it's not going to be the master of her. So 36 kilometers, I haven't walked 36 kilometers since Christmas. I mean, you know what I mean? And yes, as Johnny said, she's in the chair and it may seem like nothing to anyone. But Emma's condition, epidermolysis bullosa, is such that, as she said, you know, the smallest little bump, and it's absolute agony, and it can create a new wound. And so I'm on just to, number one, just say, how's it going? And it's great to hear your voice, Em. But just incredible stuff, this 36-kilometre walk, you know, incredible stuff. To celebrate her 36th birthday, you know, legend.
Yeah, and you're a legend as well. I don't want to blow smoke up your behind or anything, but you know...
Wait a sec, I take these pajamas down. Drop me jocks.
What are you wearing, Colin? Tell us what you're wearing. You spotted, I suppose, and it was an easy enough thing to do, you spotted how amazing and special Emma was those 10 years ago, but you could have sort of put that to the back of your head and got on with your life in Hollywood and all that sort of thing. But instead, you decided to maintain a relationship, and a very strong relationship. And whenever, I know this, whenever Emma called, you say, what can I do? So that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. That's amazing.
I mean, it's, you know, I honest to God, man, I would, you know, love to even pretend to myself that any involvement ever close to an act of altruism, but it's not. My life has been, and we talked about this the last time we spoke a few weeks ago as well, me and Emma, my life has been, you know, with the coronavirus and times being what they are, and the world being in such a period of right, we're all kind of looking at our lives and what's important and where, and I realised, you know, that Emma's a very important part of my life now. She has been for 10 years, and I guess incredible strength from her,
right.
And I guess a sense of, and it's not being better or anything like that, but how grateful I am for the things that I have, and she is one of the things that I have in that her friendship is one of the things I have in my life. So she's just an incredibly inspiring human being, and she's sneaky as well. She gets in on you, you know. She's cute and she's good crack as well. I have to say that she's good fun. I'm on the wagon, you know, over 10 years, whatever. But I've been there when she's had a Bailey's or two in the you know, the hotel in Balls Bridge over Christmas. And,
don't be telling
and we've
tales.
Had cracking years. We've had a great what?
Don't be telling
don't
tales.
Be telling
she
tales.
Says.
Oh yeah. Sorry, did I say two? One baby. drank with great civility through a straw.
just, and I know you were very friendly with Simon Fitzmaurice as well, the late Simon Fitzmaurice, and you know, out to his house. And I'm trying to get into your head a bit, just about this. And
oh, jeez, it's crowded in there.
Right, maybe I won't. Maybe I won't.
Yeah, you don't want to go too far there. I suppose, man, to be honest with you, one of the, you know, there's many blessings that I've received doing what I do for a living and haven't been allowed to do it in the way that I've been allowed to do it, at the scale or whatever that word might be, you know. And one of the things is that I have found myself in the company of people who are experiencing struggles. And I may not have found myself in the company of those people. And it's not a big group at all. It's like the two people, Emma, who we're speaking to now, and Simon Fitzmaurice. And then there's been a few other people in my life that their inclusion in my life and their allowance for me to be included in theirs has given me great rewards. Mm. And so there's no thought behind it. It's just, you know, flowing with the rivers of life and where they take you. And as I said, Emma's been an incredible gift in my life, and getting to know Simon over the whatever many years it was in the last few years of his life that I got to know him and got to communicate with him, spend a little bit of time with him in person as well, my life was incredibly enriched by knowing Simon. You know, and I suppose, Emma, you're a great connection to home as well. You know, it's that as well.
Yeah.
As much as I live over here, my life is over here. Yeah, exactly. You know, she's a very Irish spirit, very strong.
Yeah, very
warrior.
Yeah, a bit of a messer.
She's a bit of a messer, a bit of a chancer.
Do you mean?
How dare you?
I mean, she said to me the other day, I said, "What are you doing?" And she goes, I said, "You're brave." And she says, "I'm only doing what anyone would do." And I just thought, would you give her that rest? Anyone would do. All most of us want to do is sit in our holes and eat burgers and chips and watch Netflix. You know what I mean? This is not what you're doing, Em, this week is not what anyone would do. It's just
thank
not.
You.
So
thank you.
I just tell them the details. Just giving, and you go to Emma's 36 Challenge, and you can donate there. Now you set a ridiculous target there of 3,600. That's a ridiculous target. No,
we did.
No. That's gone.
Okay.
No, I'm saying 36,000. 36,000.
Really?
1,000 for every year of your life, Emma Fogarty. That's what we'll aim for.
Okay, that's what we'll do.
And we'll do everything on this program to make sure that you reach that target.
Thank you. Thank
brilliant.
You.
Brilliant. And we know people are hurting now, and we know, you know. If there's a worst time that we've ever had to ask for donations and consideration, it's now.
Yeah.
But anything anyone can give, you know, there's no expectation here. Emma's doing what she's going to do, but whatever anyone can give would be amazing.
And thank you, Colin, as well. You've been great, and I've been very lucky to have you in my life. Colin was a great support, and Johnny was. Colin and Johnny were both very supportive after my surgery.
Yeah. Because that must have been
I knew something was. I hadn't heard from Emma in a while. And look, we're not on the horn every weekend, but we do email, and I hadn't heard. And I had a feeling that something was up, and I reached out to Emma. Is okay me saying this?
Yeah, of course, go for it.
I reached out to Jimmy, who's the head of, you know, Deborah Ireland, organising things, and Jimmy Fearon, and I reached out to him and said, "Is everything okay?" And he said, I let Emma, she wants to speak to herself. So, you know, she took it. She said she took the time she needed after the amputation. And I was gutted. I mean, Jesus, I was just horrified. Just like, what else can this woman have to deal with? You know, what severity of infliction is coming next to her in the corner? But then as she said herself, it was time to, she says, you know, her ma says that to get out of bed, to get out of her head.
That's a good line.
Yes.
Thanks, Patricia. I'll use that one. I'll tell your mom, I'll use them.
Get
out of your bed, get out of your head.
That's open to interpretation, by the way.
You've been on the wagon now for 10 years. Have you had his Big Mac sauce? You haven't sampled Colin Farrell's Big Mac sauce, have you, Emma?
Me?
Not mine, no.
Did I hear you'd made your own Big Mac sauce, Colin?
Yeah, I I did. We actually had it when yesterday, day before or something like that. It's a once a weeker now for
Is
a
it?
While anyway.
Yeah.
We've done it at home as well. I tell you what, I've done it at home. Emma, I'm going to go down to Emma before the 25th and I'll bring you down a tub of Big Mac sauce.
I'll take that.
What's your secret ingredient, Colin Farrell, in your Big Mac sauce?
Well, the one I wasn't expecting to see, Ray Darcy, was onion powder. I would have never guessed there was a bit of splash of onion powder in
there. Yes.
But, are you heading down? Are you going to go down and see him for a
yes,
bit of a walk?
Yes, and we'll Brilliant. Do a bit of a recording and then we'll talk to Johnny as well
Brilliant.
Just to make sure. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, Emma, I'll see you soon.
I'll see you soon.
Colin Farrell, thanks for getting
Emma,
up for us.
I'll see you. I hope, Emma, I'll see you at Christmas. I'll be home at Christmas.
I hope I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll pop down
thanks
as well.
A million,
Ray,
Colin.
Thanks for having me on.
And just before you go, great excitement in our house, Colin, because Artemis Fowl is appearing on Disney Plus. When is it? It's a couple of days' time, isn't it? 12th of June.
Oh, yeah. So, I think, geez, I'm not sure. Soon, anyway.
So that's,
this week or the next week.
I've an 8-year-old, soon to be 8-year-old, so yeah, that's excitement.
I hope he enjoys it.
Yeah. Emma, I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. Colin,
I'll
thank you very much.
Thanks, Colin.
Stay safe, both of you, and mind yourselves. Okay.
Yeah, thank
you. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Two equally beautiful people, Emma Fogarty and Colin Farrell. And Elena Smith's been on to say, most amazing inspirational lady ever. And I think Elena worked with Emma back in the day. Emma never ceases to amaze me with her fortitude and resilience. She's some woman for one woman, says Joanne. And Katrina says, amazing young woman. And what an amazing lady. I will donate if she has a fundraiser. She does Just Giving. Just go to Just Giving. And then it's Emma's 36 Challenge. And it's all for Deborah Ireland. And if you go to Deborah Ireland, DEBRA, you'll find out the details there as well. And we'll put it up on our website. Petronella, Ryan, Emma's amazing. I had her in my PE class many years ago. And Katrina says, Emma has immeasurable courage beyond words. I hate to think of her suffering. Could she not walk less, even though she is gusty? Halve it at least, a half kilometre for each year. She's unbelievable, says Katrina. And I don't think there's any talking to Emma Fogarty when she gets something into her head. She's a very brave woman, as we've established, but very determined as well. I pray that God will take away your daily pain, says somebody. I wish Emma success with her 36-mile walk. Lovely interview there, Emma, amazing, and Colin, so proud of both, tears in my eyes. And that's from Anna Kilkenny. And I remember watching Emma and Colin on the Red Late Show some time back, and at the time I just thought she was just so brave to be so tolerant of those pain thresholds. She really is amazing and an inspiration for all. She really puts things in perspective. Happy birthday, says Emma, and well done, Colin, for being a good friend to her always. And can you repeat the Just Giving page? Bosco wants to know. Bosco, it's Just Giving and then Emma's 36 Challenge. So Just Giving. So you just go into the Google thing and go Just Giving and Emma's 36 Challenge. Or else you can go to Deborah Ireland and it'll direct you there. So that's Emma and Colin Farrell. Anish, Tosh, and the Freeve Skelton in Oakdale, Marini Huliwan. Grandma, good Marion. Thank you very much. 51551ray@rte.ie. Mary's been on. She says, here's the weather forecast for today from Cork. We didn't ask for it, Mary, but she gave it to us anyway. Thick drizzle, wind, and it's cold. Where's our sunshine gone? Asked Mary. I don't know. Asked Evelyn Cusack. I'm in agreement with the listener who sent the email about magpies. They're nest robbers, taking eggs and chicks. They hop along the top of my hedge, looking through it for a nest. I hate them. Mary's not having a good day down in Cork. The sun will return. Sun will come out, maybe not tomorrow, but at some stage in the future. That's guaranteed. That is guaranteed. And in a very strange, weird way, we like to think that the All-Ireland Quiz brings a little sunshine into your life every day at just after 4 o'clock. Ah, yes. Maybe it's the theme tune. Maybe it's the talking to people. Anyway, today in the All-Ireland Quiz, first round, Roscommon take on Laois, and representing Roscommon from his new abode in Spain is Kieran Wallace. How are you doing, Kieran?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk
good
to
afternoon.
You. Yes, good afternoon.
You
now, you've been on to us. You were on to us before because you were... What were you saying to us?
I just was saying maybe instead of repeating the whole... All-Ireland quiz, maybe to do one with the diaspora, to, with people who are Irish in different countries all around the world. But I got in the end.
You got in the end, yes. What brings you to Spain?
Lucia Rodriguez Vasquez brings me to Spain, I suppose.
And Lucia is your girlfriend?
She's going out with a girl out here, yeah, and I was living in Spain for a while before. So just before the lockdown came in here. So,
and had you intended to stay?
I took a chance, basically. I thought that we'd be shut for a while, so I thought I'd be here till near enough the summer anyway, and I come out most summers. I come out every summer, so kind of just roll the dice and I suppose, yeah, I'm still here.
How long are you going out with Lucia?
Just saying, your search is there, like, it's a long distance one, so I don't know, do you add up months or years? since 2014, 2015.
And where'd you meet?
In Valencia.
Were you on holidays?
No, I was living in Valencia.
Oh, you're working there, living there, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
I was living and working there at the time, and I've moved back to Ireland since.
And you're still together?
Well, yeah, we haven't killed each other over this lockdown, so.
Yeah, this is a test of your relationship.
Great test.
What are things like in Spain now?
I think it was very strange the first 2 months. I mean, you're only allowed to go to the supermarket or the chemist, and that was it. And like, I was looking on, because I enjoy running, like, and I was looking on with people walking their dogs. With envy, like, because they were allowed to bring out their dogs, but you weren't allowed to go out, like, even to do any exercise. So, the place I was renting was in a little rooftop apartment, and I was doing like a laps of the rooftop. And a friend of mine was like saying, "How long does it take you to do a lap?" And a second. Like, so it was strange because like everyone's looking on, and there was just tension in the supermarkets. And like he was like, "Yeah, you go to the supermarket," and you know that was your own access to the outdoors.
And things are getting looser now.
Yeah, definitely. You can see it. I mean, people are going to the terraces, like the bars, would say, or the outdoor parts of them. I mean, a lot of people would have the tables and chairs and set up on outdoor terraces. So they're going to the bars. But I don't seem to think that should be happening. But like, I suppose people have to make a way of life, and it's such a big part of the economy here that, you know, the bars, the restaurants. So if they have an outdoor part to their business that they were allowed to open it up, and that's been opened up for about 3 or 4 weeks. So,
and are you in a tourist area?
I am. Yeah, it's called a place called Javia. It would be. It's very picturesque and it's nice. The beach here.
And what's the temperature? What's the temperature there today?
It's actually a bit stuffy. They went for a run earlier on and it's cloudy, but it's still very heavy. So I think it's about 25, 26.
Oh, nice,
So it's always warm here.
I think it's about 13, 14 here, just for your information. Okay. Not that you care. Anyway, have you ever represented...
I do keep...
Have you ever represented Roscommon at anything?
I suppose a bit of underage football. There's a thing called Scorn and Og. It was like... just like a quick question time for you know, a representative
he's a bit older than you, isn't he? Chris O'Dowd. You wouldn't have played with him back in the day.
My sister-in-law, my brother's wife is from the same town as he's from, so I think they knew of each other from the area.
Don't mention the name of the town.
Okay, I won't.
Don't.
West Roscommon. I'll just say
right. Roscommon. Okay. Now representing Laois. Is Margaret Conlon. How are you doing, Margaret?
Very well, thank you.
Good to talk to you. Whereabouts in Laois are you?
I'm in Stradbally.
Aha. We were talking to Emma Fogarty before. She's a Laois woman as well. She lives in Abbey Leaks. So it's all Laois today. What's your story with the lockdown?
Well, I'm trying to fill in from one part of the week to the other, but I have to get some shopping occasionally.
Yes.
And I may go out very occasionally, but that would be maybe once a fortnight, once a week.
Is that it, right? And who's in lockdown with you?
My son Sean, who is Down syndrome with, he's 27.
Okay.
He goes and walks every day, and he's ill, and my husband.
Okay. Now, that's not a great line. I wonder, can we improve it? Do you want to take a commercial break? Is that possible? And I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a commercial break, Margaret and Kieran, and we'll try and improve your line, and we'll get back to you after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're in the middle of the All-Ireland quiz. We have Kieran Wallace from Roscommon, now living in Spain, on one line, and we think we have a better line from Margaret Conlon, representing County Laois. How are you doing, Margaret?
Not too bad.
Ah, sure. That's, why didn't we use that in the first place? That's brilliant. You're there. So you're saying Sean has Down syndrome, and I believe he has a number of medals for the Special Olympics.
Yes, he has 2 gold medals for the Special Olympics in 2016.
Brilliant.
And he has a bronze medal for 2016 as well. But he also got a senior county medal with Laois in 2016 for Stradbally in 2016.
You must be very proud of him.
Oh, we're very proud of Sean.
Yeah. And so Sean's there, and your husband and yourself.
And my husband Morris, yes, and myself.
Right, okay. Are you managing okay?
We're managing very well. At first, we were getting food delivered to us, and then we progressed a little bit, and we got my son, who was in Dublin, to bring the food, and now we have a lot of food in, and we just push it into the freezer, and we keep going that way.
You're sorted, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you yourself, Margaret, ever represented Laois at anything over the years?
Not really.
No. Okay.
I represent my family. I'm the mother in the family.
Yes, you keep it all going. Keep it all ticking over. You do, right. Yeah. Okay, let's play the county anthems then. For you, Kieran, let's bring you back to Roscommon with this one.
Oh, boil in the county Roscommon, that's where I long to dwell, to hear the local singers sing the songs I love so well, and walk along the riverbank and watch the fishes rise, and see the curlew mountains slope gently to the sky.
Here you go, and for you, Margaret,
thank you.
The Laois song.
Lovely.
Lovely Laois.
Lovely Laois.
There you go. That's Trudy Taylor. Okay, good luck to you both. No referring to Google, and let's get a bit of tension going. So, Kieran Wallace, your first question is on Margaret's county, County Laois. So, Laois comedian Bernard O'Shea stars alongside Jennifer Zamparelli in a sitcom about 1980s, a 1980s Irish husband and wife. Can you name the couple? No, that's for Kieran. That's for Kieran, Margaret. Kieran. Hello, Kieran. It's a nightmare today. We're having a nightmare. Hello, Kieran. No, Kieran's gone. I tell you what we're going to do. Mm. We're going to bring you back tomorrow. We're going to bring you both back tomorrow, and we'll have everything sorted. Is Kieran there? No, he's gone. He's gone. Margaret, listen, we'll bring you back tomorrow, and we'll do it all again. Okay? Mind yourself. Stay safe.
All right. Thank
bye
you.
Now, bye now. Bye. Bye. Did you ever get one of those days? Boys, did you ever get one of those days? When nothing goes right from morning to night, did you ever get one of those days? It's time for a musical interlude, just to relax. And we'll have Kieran and Margaret back tomorrow. It is just one of those days. It is just one of those days. The computer refused to work, and now telecommunication lines from Spain and Stradbally and County Laois are refusing to work. So it is with a little bit of trepidation and all my fingers and toes crossed that I do the next introduction. It's an exciting day for Lola Pettigrew and Fionn O'Shea as their new movie, Dating Amber, launches on Amazon Prime today. The movie is set in my home county of Kildare during the mid-90s, and it follows the journey of Eddie, played by Fionn, and Amber, played by Lola, who engage in a pretend relationship to escape the homophobic taunting of their classmates. And Lola and Fionn are currently isolating together in Wicklow, and they're on the line now via Skype. Hello, Lola.
Hiya.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello, Fionn.
Hi, Ray.
Hey.
How are you?
Hey, great. Great to talk to you both. Congratulations on the movie, which I watched this morning. Now, sometimes I was looking over your shoulder at the Curragh of Kildare, but most of the time I was looking at both of you.
I don't blame you.
So which of you now is the one who can tell us the details of the movie?
Well, Lola's just pointed at me, so
okay,
I think
okay,
I'm doing
that's handy. Go for it.
So Dating Amber is a story about two teenagers who start a fake relationship with one another in order to stop the taunts and speculation about their sexuality in Kildare in 1995.
Okay, so you're in sort of leaving cert year?
Yes.
Yeah, and both the your character, Eddie, more so struggling with his sexuality. Lola, your character is a little bit more comfortable, isn't she, Amber?
Yeah, I definitely think that Amber doesn't see coming out as something that's impossible. She's very secure in her sexuality. I think it's just the idea of coming out in her small town in Kildare at that time that doesn't seem like it's possible. But she definitely is very secure in her sexuality and is just kind of looking for a way out.
Mm. And you would like to think that we live in a different Ireland now, 25 years on. Because the language that is used in the movie wouldn't be tolerated now.
I mean, you'd like to think that, wouldn't you? But that, I think that casual homophobia definitely still exists. I mean, I definitely heard it in school and outside of school. And I think sometimes we like to pat ourselves on the back and talk about how progressive we are. But just because we've progressed in terms of the law doesn't mean that society is followed quite as closely.
Yeah. People will recognise your accent as not a Kildare flat Midlands accent. So you're from Belfast originally. So it, was it difficult getting the Kildare flat accent down pat?
I have a lot of really close pals from Kildare who were wonderful in helping me. And I'm sure when they watch the film later, I'm either going to get some tax saying it was great or some tax maybe slagging me off a little bit. Yeah.
I would imagine that a flat accent, which doesn't seem to have any accent really, is more difficult to do than something that has an obvious accent, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's all about finding the lilt, I think, and sort of the cadence of the words. Our lovely director, David Freyan, who also wrote the screenplay, is also from Kildare. So that was quite helpful.
Yeah. And it's because I've been reading interviews with him, and he is, for people's information, he is Patrick Frayne's brother. And I've read Patrick's book, which hasn't been released yet, but I got a preview copy. And there's a lot of similarities between the movie and the book, because both of the lads are drawing on their childhood on the Curragh camp and their military background. So Fionn, you play Eddie, and Eddie is the son of a commandant. And I suppose there's a pressure there for Eddie to walk in the footsteps of his dad into the military life.
Yeah, absolutely. Eddie has an artifice of masculinity that he's cobbled together from his dad, who's in the army, and kind of books and films and magazines of that time. So he, I guess not to give too much away, but rather unsuccessfully tries to join the army.
Right. And you're in the middle of a sort of a storm, a very nice storm at the moment, because you play the part of Jamie in Normal People. Marianne's not so nice boyfriend.
I think not so nice is putting it lightly.
So it's odd, because Normal People lives, I suppose, in a very social media world. So I would imagine you're getting huge reaction. And people, do people find it difficult to differentiate between fact and fiction?
Yeah, I think that it's mad, because like as soon as the show came out, I think I always expected there to be some sort of backlash, because Jamie is an antagonist. But I don't think I expected the level of hate that people have for Jamie. But I've really enjoyed looking through all the kind of comments online. And it is, you know, it is actually kind of easy to separate, because thankfully I'm a lot more like Eddie than I am Jamie.
Yeah. There's a lovely relationship between you two in the film, because you're friends, but not an item, as they say in Kildare. You're not, are they an item? So you're not an item. And you didn't know each other before the movie, did you, Lola?
No, we met each other at the chemistry reads, and we read with a lot of different people and also each other. And I think that we knew straight away that we sort of hit it off. And once we got the parts, we did a lot of rehearsals. again under our fearless leader David Frayne, and sort of got to hang out an awful lot before we started the shoot, and it was sort of like lightning in a bottle. I mean, we're in isolation together now, so I guess you could say we do like each other.
And there's a wave, isn't there? Like, normal people has created, I suppose, a demand for drama involving young Irish people.
Yeah, I think that, like, I think now, you know, seeing shows like Normal, well, maybe I'm the bad person to talk about this because I was in too, but I suppose seeing Normal People and Dating Amber and everything coming out of Ireland, it makes you so proud to be Irish. Yeah. And, you know, I was counting my blessings, and I felt so lucky to be able to work on both of those back to back and spend time in Ireland as well.
And, you know, is age a thing you can talk about? Because obviously you're playing the parts of 17, 18-year-olds. And what age are you, Fionn?
I am 45. I'm 24.
You're 24, right? And do you mind me, Lola? You never ask a lady your age, but...
No, it's great. I'm 24 as well.
24 as well, yeah. And so is that odd, playing the part of a 17, 18-year-old? It happens a lot, doesn't it? I think Paul Mescal's in his 20s as well, isn't he? He plays the 17-year-old.
He's 24 as well.
I think they sent out blanket casting to all 24-year-olds. No, I think it's a really lovely thing. I mean, people often ask us, do we tire of playing teenagers? But I don't think much about the age. I mean, I think you're just always seeking out interesting characters. And I mean, teenagers are very interesting characters that are going through an awful lot in their lives. And they're very complex. So, I mean, as long as people keep offering us roles, I think we'll keep taking them.
And what did you draw on for your character, Lola?
Well, I had a natural affinity for Amber. I identify as a queer woman, and I went through a lot of similar experiences. I mean, it was definitely by no means as tough. And my sister, who doesn't mind me talking about it either, came out as a lesbian when she was 18, and she definitely had a much harder time than I did. So there was that. But also, I mean, this experience is so universal, you know, feeling like you can't be who you are in your hometown and, you know, needing to escape. David Frayne said that this was his love letter to the kids that needed to escape in order to be who they are. Mm. And I think that's a lovely universal theme, because oftentimes LGBT film gets ghettoized into a genre. And I think that what we've really shown is it's something that universally a lot of people can enjoy.
Yeah, there's a lovely heart to the movie. And there's some really funny scenes in it as well. I laughed out loud. You say you identify as queer and your sister came out as lesbian.
Yeah.
So would you just explain those terms for me? I'm sorry, but I'm not being coy now, but I don't. Go on.
I think queer is a term that maybe is new to a lot of people, and it might have had a lot of pejorative terms before, but there's a massive reclamation of the word. So queer can mean to you. I sort of think that you bring the definition rather than the label bringing the definition to you. So I am someone who is attracted to both men and women and non-binary and trans and sort of anything in between.
Right.
And my sister is a woman who likes women.
Okay. Thank you for that. So what happens next then? You're in Wicklow, and the current pandemic and what happens in the coming months and maybe year is a big challenge for making television and making movies, isn't it? Fionn?
Yeah, it's a really big challenge, and I'm hoping to be back on set in August, and there's kind of things that have been put in place to try and continuous testing as you shoot, and particularly the people that you're in close contact with, and wearing masks and everything else. But I think it's something that's going to be really different and really tricky. I think that people in theatre as well are finding it really difficult, because I don't think we know when shows can go back on.
It's going to be weird for you as well when you're back out and about and people recognise you from Normal People. And indeed from dating Amber. Because I know you've been in roles before, but not in as big as normal people.
Yeah, I think so. Luckily, like so far, the only interactions I have is 6 feet apart in Tesco. So the most that people can do is kind of give me a filthy look at the checkout. But yeah, it is going to be it's going to be really odd. I guess I'm keeping my fingers crossed that people can separate the character.
And
from
listen,
the
actor. if I was ever casting for a biopic of Dermot Bannon, you'd be definitely in for
thank you very much.
As a younger man. Lola, listen, I loved you in A Bump Along the Way.
Thank you.
Which was out last year. I don't know where people can watch it now, but it comes highly recommended from here. So too does Dating Amber, which goes live, or it drops on, or whatever the current phrase is, on Amazon Prime Video, which is big news to be on that sort of platform, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And to be able to reach such a wide audience, we were thrilled when we heard that Amazon were picking it up as an Amazon original. We think it's the perfect home for the film. So we're made up.
Great. Fionn O'Shea, Lola Pettigrew, enjoy watching the movie tonight, or enjoy getting the feedback from your friends and family about accents and acting. and thanks for talking to us today. And we'll talk again at the other side, maybe in person. See you, Lola. Sure. See you, Fionn. Bye now. Bye. Bye. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.